On this show, we often talk about breaking problems down into their smallest sub-problems, the smallest version of a problem, doing small things. This is a principle that we talk about on the show. And in today's episode, we have a guest that believes in doing just that. So much so that he built essentially an entire company off of that concept. Today's episode, we invite Andrew Ofsted onto the show. Andrew is the co-founder of Airtable. I believe Airtable is the future, or is going to at least define a big portion of the future for the management of data, and specifically the management of spreadsheet data. I'm really excited about this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't yet subscribed and you don't want to miss out on future episodes, including the second part of this interview, I encourage you to go and subscribe. Before you forget, go ahead and open up whatever podcasting app you're using right now and subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes. Thank you again for listening. Now let's get into the interview with Andrew Ofsted. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on.
All right, so I'm really excited that you're on as well, because I found Airtable on my own volition something like a year and a half ago. I don't remember exactly how long ago it was. It was very early in Airtable's history, and immediately fell in love with the concept. And even more recently, which Airtable's not paying me to talk about this stuff, by the way, just let's be very clear there. But Airtable released this new set of features that allows people to use Airtable in much more composable ways and much more powerful ways. And I'm sure we're going to talk about some of that stuff down the road in the conversation. So if you're listening right now, make sure you stick around for some of that, because it really is an extremely powerful tool. But before we get there, I'd love for you, Andrew, to talk a little bit about your background, where you came from, and what do you do at Airtable?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for the plug. Really appreciate it. I'm one of the co-founders of Airtable, kind of focused on a lot of stuff, but mostly kind of the product side. And I have a background in product management. So before Airtable, I studied electrical engineering and economics in school. Actually, even before that, in high school, I was always really interested in software, and particularly, video game development. But I sort of had this conception that I wanted to kind of figure out how things worked at a lower level in college. So I did electrical engineering. But I had a couple friends in college who were kind of like the tech nerds. We'd always talk about startups and ideas and that type of thing. After college, we sort of stayed in touch. I left and basically went to work for a consulting firm in their sort of research department, kind of building enterprise products and demos mostly that we sort of pitched to Fortune 500 clients. Things like iPhone application. This was kind of back in 2008, 2009. Flash applications for like CRM and stuff like that. And I sort of, after that, I kind of went to work for Google. They have a rotational kind of new grad product management program called the APM program that I was a part of. They just kind of drop you into a product and kind of give you some guidelines, but you're more or less just kind of like dropped in, and you're told to basically kind of manage the roadmap of this product and sort of be the PM, which is kind of like a lot of different things. But it's a very sort of fast paced learning environment. So I was on Android for a year in my first kind of project there, working on kind of some of their social media apps and some other pieces of Android. But then I moved on to Google Maps for a couple of years, where my role there was kind of basically taking Google Maps for the desktop, which had become very pretty complicated over the years. They'd sort of like added on a ton of features and a bunch of different data sources into Maps. But the UI was getting super complex. So I was kind of part of this team that was from scratch trying to take that UI and just drastically simplify it, and kind of just into a few kind of core pieces of UI, like a search box and kind of like these imagery tiles and that type of thing, to really simplify the experience and yet kind of expose all the information and complexity that was there. So I really sort of enjoyed that role, where you're taking something very complex, like all the world geographic information, and trying to present it in a way to the user that's kind of very powerful and yet really simple. So At the same time, I started like, you know, my myself and my two co-founders, Howie and Emmett, who, as I mentioned, we went to college together. We had stayed in touch, and Howie had started this company, eTax, which was a kind of a CRM in your inbox product. And he did Y Combinator for that. And he eventually sold that company to Salesforce. And sort of while he was there, he kind of saw that, you know, a lot of like software out there, especially in the business world, is just kind of a database with some views on top and, you know, some kind of like simple logic. But for the most part, like everything that, you know, a lot of stuff that people kind of use to organize things in the working world and kind of add that layer of process and stuff and do a lot of stuff the software does is just kind of like a database. So we were both really interested in the space of kind of giving, just kind of making the process of kind of creating really useful software way easier for the end user. And it seemed kind of crazy to us that you had to be a programmer and write code to kind of create and customize useful software. So and the database is kind of like the kind of obvious place to start. And we sort of just set to work kind of trying to take this pretty complicated thing, which is a database, just simplify it such that anybody could come in and pick it up, given some, you know, basic familiarity with a spreadsheet, and just kind of like take this complicated concept and just give it to non-developers. So that was kind of the genesis of the company. And we just kind of started in the early days, just kind of building prototypes, doing iterations, kind of talking to customers, showing them demos and getting feedback, incorporating that, and just trying to simplify this, you know, the database as much as possible.
This is such a loaded, so many pieces of advice that we can pull out of this experience that you've had. I think the first train I want to kind of follow here is the idea of complexity. You mentioned that a few times, and I think it's really key to understand, first of all, you know, why Airtable exists in the first place. But secondly, to hopefully pull out, you know, moving forward into the future for developers who are creating UIs, or even beyond UIs. It's not just limited to UI development. It can be in some strategic sense, taking complexity and turning it into a useful, human usable thing. I'd love to know, you know, what do you think is the most useful concept that you have learned over the years dealing with taking complexity and making it accessible, taking a complex idea and simplifying it to the point of accessibility without removing the flexibility or the power of that thing?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I don't know if there's a simple answer. I would say that sort of a lot of it for me, and I think this is the case in a lot of situations, just sort of having a very deep understanding of all the problems that a customer is trying to solve and all the sort of kind of feature area of a product. And just kind of taking all those and thinking about, you know, basically sort of components or kind of modular pieces that you can sort of assemble. And each of those pieces has like a, you know, has to have a lot of expressiveness. So sort of like going back to the Google Maps example, you know, there's like a search box. So, you know, basically anything you want to find, you can just type into that. And basically you sort of, you know, take a lot of complexity that might otherwise exist in UI, where you're sort of like turning on different visual layers and kind of toggling stuff. And you can sort of put that into something like a search box where you just type a query. And then there's like enough sort of, work that goes into kind of surfacing the right content for that basically really kind of makes this a simple yet super expressive and elegant interface. I would say like another, so sort of like the, maybe an analog in Airtable is we have, you know, we have this product where we have, it's pretty simple at first glance, where we have kind of a few main components you can sort of, or what we think of as kind of Lego pieces you can mix and match to, kind of create a lot of, kind of emergent complexity. So we have, you know, you basically go into Airtable and you initially kind of have like this spreadsheet view, and you can add fields, which are basically, you know, the equivalent of columns in a spreadsheet. And those can be different types. So a field can be like a, you know, like a colored select value where you can kind of choose from a different bunch of different options. Or it can be a sort of a link to a record in a different table, a few different things. And so you sort of understand this concept of having records in this table and fields that can sort of like hold different types of data. And then we sort of have this concept of views, and you can sort of take those same records and view them in different ways. So you can view them on a calendar or sort of like a, you know, Kanban board or as cards. And then I think you alluded to this earlier, but we have this new kind of product called Blocks, which are kind of like these modular apps you can sort of add on to your base. So, you know, there are only kind of three main high level components, but each one of those has kind of like these modular things you can mix and match, and they're very kind of expressive pieces of the UI that can kind of provide a lot of different kind of expressive freedom for the user. So you can sort of combine all those Lego pieces, you know, and to kind of create a lot of emergent complexity and to solve very detailed problems. But the kind of individual components themselves are pretty simple. So I don't know if that completely answers your question, but I think like part of it is just like kind of going back to what I was saying earlier is instead of just kind of, you know, listening to customers and responding to each individual piece of feedback. Like if somebody is like, oh, I wish, you know, in Airtable, there's a way for me to add an attachment to a record. Like we're not going to add a hard coded, like, you know, attachment field to every single record. Like instead, we're going to sort of think about how that fits into our broader framework and come up with a broader framework, sort of a layer of abstraction that can not only allow you to sort of do that, but add all sorts of other functionality to the product. So I think it's sort of like, you know, just kind of like collecting all the a lot of feedback and then sort of breaking it up into the higher level components to not only solve that specific problem, but sort of solve a whole class of problems, which, you know, is sort of something you encounter in computer science a lot, as well as I think in design.
Yeah, that is exactly the line of reasoning. It's almost counterintuitive. If you imagine, okay, how can I make a very flexible, scaled system? As it turns out, you don't think at that level. You think at the very smallest level, and then you think how those small things relate to each other. So like, I imagine, you know, building out like a grid, right? And you take all of your components and put them in the rows and the columns, mm-hmm. and then compare, you know, for component A and component B, how do they relate to each other? Or even for two components that are the same, how can those two relate to each other? What can they do together? You know, what happens when one is inside of the other one? Or, you know, depending on how your components are composed, you know, let's using the language of something like React, you know, if you're rendering a component inside of another component, for example, and again, we're using UI-driven concepts, but really this isn't just about UI. It's you can think this way too. You know, taking a concept and saying, "Oh, okay," you know, for a search bar, for example. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a search result. Well, actually, what you have is a list item, mm-hmm. right? And so, if you break it down to as primitive of a thing as you can, and then see what the shape is of the common primitive things. That to me is what Airtable does so brilliantly, and really what a good problem solver does as well is you start to recognize the shapes of your problems. You say, oh, you know, that to-do app. Oh, that's a model of view in a controller. I've recognized that pattern before, right? Yeah. I see things that I've done before in that. I can shape this stuff to fit this mold very similarly.
Yeah, and it's like a lot of times that, you know, at first glance, they, you know, to sort of the you know, the layperson, they seem like these, you know, these two components seem like very different things. But sort of once you sort of get down to it, you know, there's kind of a flexible underlying kind of component that sort of can, you know, meet either one of those requirements. So, yeah, I think that was a perfect way to put it, what you just said about the sort of React component analogy there.
Yeah. So have you heard of toothpaste.coffee?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay. So this is a 30 days of innovative challenges, which sounds kind of, you know, high-minded. But realistically, all that they do is they send you 30 emails over the course of 30 days, and they ask you a provocative design-oriented question.
Oh, interesting.
So, for example, how might you combine toothpaste and coffee? And to me, this is exactly what a good problem-solving kind of complexity discussion ends up being about, is these edges, these weird scenarios where you have, you know, how does an image relate to an image? Oh, maybe that's a gallery, right? Like maybe we've suddenly created a higher order component here, just because we explored how these two things relate to each other. Rather than creating the things that we already know relate to each other, we're forcing ourselves to, you know, consider context and to change the context of a given concept. So now it's not, oh, I'm going to add an attachment to every type, right? To every primitive type.
Yeah.
But instead, I'm going to make attachments a primitive on their own.
Yeah.
It's a totally different concept.
Yeah, for sure. That's interesting. I haven't heard of this toothpaste coffee thing, but I wonder if this is like a long con for some company to like source, you know, brilliant ideas. Yeah.
it very well could be. There are some, I believe there's like a forum where people can discuss their ideas and their solutions to the problems and that kind of thing. And generally it's completely bizarre things like come up with a new use for a paperclip or, you know, which at first sounds kind of, I don't know, patronizing to the design industry. But when you actually do the exercise, and also, by the way, you know, realize that it's free other than you're exchanging your email, you start to think, wait a second, I haven't used this muscle of my brain in a while, right? Like, especially if you get into the habit of writing code and solving the same types of problems over and over.
Yeah.
It's easy to forget that kind of reforming and again, breaking things down. Something that I'm really kind of pushing on the show is this idea of finding the kind of the fundamental attributes of a thing rather than just focusing on the title or the naming, kind of the encapsulation of the thing. Break that away and see if you can look at the attributes of the thing, because that's a little bit more enlightening as to how that thing may function in a system.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, I like that sort of, you know, well, like, what would you do with a paperclip type thing? Like, I don't know if that's a specific question, but just the thought of, like, if you were a designer trying to make a better paperclip, like, it seems like a pretty boring problem, right? But to your point, sort of like, what are the actual challenges people are trying to solve with a, you know, paperclip? And that's not just like, say that we're going to take this shape that everybody has in their head that they think is a paperclip and kind of, you know, add some colors to it or round out the corners. Like, the better way to think about that problem is like, you know, people are trying to hold papers together, and maybe there's a better way to do that. Or maybe, you know, instead of a paperclip, like, we should figure out a better way to send documents, and like, what is the root problem we're trying to solve? And then kind of from those kind of core pieces and those kind of first principle, you know, yeah, kind of breaking it down to the underlying components, and then kind of like reassembling it from the ground up is sort of like a kind of a type of first principle thinking that I think is incredibly valuable for any, you know, designer or anybody creating anything. And it's probably a good exercise to kind of, you know, give yourself totally wild ways to kind of exercise that part of your brain.
Yeah. And you can approach it from the other angle too. You know, this is a paperclip. I'm going to hand you a paperclip, but actually, is it a paperclip or is it a piece of metal wire? Right. And so you can break down materials as well. And so you start seeing materials differently. And so once you can see problems and materials differently, then very often new things, totally, like you're saying, the emergent complexity, or what was the phrase that you used?
I think emergent complexity was it, when it's kind of taking, you know, a bunch of seemingly simple things and just, there's the combinatorial explosion of different combinations, different ways to mix and match that kind of arises from a bunch of simple, you know, slightly differentiated components.
Yeah, the idea that that, you know, if you buy a box of crayons, nobody encoded in those crayons what you were able to draw with them. And so you're really buying an endless number of possibilities, right? And so the same thing can be said for that emergent concept of saying, hey, you know what? Actually, all of these labels that we've put on things, what if we took those labels off? Yeah. What if we didn't have that vocabulary? How would we look at things a little bit differently?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And sort of like that's one philosophy we definitely have at Airtable is whenever we're sort of, kind of looking at customer feedback, it's, you always kind of want to get to the root problem that they're encountering and then sort of work backwards from there. And I think we try to as much as possible, instead of just kind of aggregating a bunch of data points for kind of people saying we want this thing or that thing, we try to understand the underlying story and the underlying issue and the underlying problem we're trying to solve and kind of work from there. Because a lot of times the solution that is suggested is quite a bit different than the way you could potentially kind of solve their problem, and maybe a way that solves a lot of other people's problems as well, or does it in a better way than they had suggested initially.
Today's episode is generously sponsored by a company that you hopefully have heard of if you've been listening to the show for very long at all, and that is Linode. Linode allows you to get a Linux distribution up and running in the cloud with just a few clicks. You pick the distribution, you pick the node location, and you pick your resources, and then it's basically off to the races. And you can do anything with Linode that you can imagine doing with Linux. So if you wanted to spin up your own microservices, or let's say you wanted a private Git repository, this is actually a really popular use for Linode right now because of all of the news with GitHub. You can do that. You can do that kind of stuff with Linode. And it starts at such a low barrier to entry, $5 a month. I can't imagine paying $5 a month for anything of value. And Linode actually provides you a 1 gigabyte of RAM server in the cloud with an SSD storage backing that server. So I really encourage you to check it out. Go over to spec.fm/Linode, use the code DEVELOPERT2018 at checkout, and you're going to get $20 worth of credit. You can use that $20 on any of Linode's hourly plans and services. Go and check it out, spec.fm/Linode. Thank you again to Linode for sponsoring today's episode of Developer Tea. I think, again, this is a more American problem maybe than it is a universal problem, but increasingly so for all kind of people in this industry, at least, the idea that problems are supposed to be solved quickly, rather than solved thoughtfully, can be really damaging in the long term. And so, but at the same time, you don't want to strip away. And so it's really about finding where the most valuable effort is rather than where the most complex effort is necessarily. And sometimes those things can become a little bit muddy, but this conversation on complexity is exactly where I was hoping this discussion would go. But I do want to kind of pull back a little bit and ask you, of all of these experiences that you've had, what really kind of, for you personally, what parts of this have you connected to at kind of a deeper level where you feel like, hey, you know what? I'm really actually serving a important purpose for these people who are using Airtable, for example. Mm-hmm. Has there been any particular moment where you felt really strongly that you were exactly where you were kind of, quote, supposed to be in that moment?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I think I've always found products that kind of take something that was previously really complicated and only accessible to kind of a small class of specialists and really kind of lowered the usability bar enough that it kind of opens up this whole new kind of class of creativity for, kind of a whole new set of people. So I guess one example of that is going back to my experience at Google. I was a product manager there, and I think, I had some background in design, but I didn't do a lot of it. And I think part of the reason was I always thought of designers as people who, spend all day in Photoshop, which is this very complicated piece of software. And it's just pretty intimidating. And they're always kind of working on these beautiful pixel perfect kind of photographic designs. And, a few products came out when I was at Google, like Fireworks initially, but then Sketch, which was kind of a much better implementation of that, where they sort of give you the kind of essential pieces you need to kind of creatively express software design in a very simple way that kind of lowered that bar for actually people to and people, especially in the software industry, to kind of create mocks and get their creative ideas out into the world. So I found that to be very powerful as a product manager, where I sort of like started doing a lot of design work and kind of really kind of embraced that side of things, as well as kind of like the slightly technical side and everything else that kind of goes with that role. But I thought it was just really awesome that somebody could go and design a piece of software that basically, helps to kind of democratize this previously sort of, slightly arcane discipline, and gives them this new form of creative expression and empowerment. So I think the same idea is, definitely holds with Airtable. And we have a lot of cases where, people that, get a ton of value out of the product are a lot of times in organizations, and they're really good at their job. Like they know, maybe they're working in video production. They sort of know like how the best way that for their specific company and their specific team to actually run a production process. But, previously, they don't really have control over their software. So they could sort of buy something off the shelf where the kind of creator of that piece of software, some software engineer or team basically kind of creates this one size fits all piece of software for their very specific use case. And a lot of times that doesn't actually fit what they want to do or what their team wants to do. Alternatively, they can use something like a spreadsheet, which isn't really designed for kind of building these workflows and more kind of built for number crunching, or some sort of like project management tool where you sort of have to fit sort of the complex, information that makes sense for your team into kind of like this box where you have like a name and a task name and a due date. Like it doesn't always like make sense to kind of squeeze into there. So something like Airtable gives them the ability, without kind of being a programmer, to kind of build the perfect application that kind of fits their very specific process and workflow. And I think that's really empowering, because a lot of times in organizations today, the way you can have an impact is to kind of improve a process around something and kind of make a team better. And a lot of ways, like the process that kind of, is the glue between a team is oftentimes software. And so it's sort of like giving people the tools to kind of actually customize that software and make it fit their team is, I think, incredibly empowering. And sort of, like I said before, kind of lowers that usability bar for creating this really useful and empowering software to a whole new class of people outside of, the developer community. So, and we have examples of people, like the major retailer. We have a customer who was a fabric sourcer, and they previously had this awful process where they'd be sending around Excel spreadsheets, kind of listing all the vendors and the different types of fabrics. And then they'd send it off to the design team. And the design would be like, hey, I need a picture of this. And they had like a whole separate folder of kind of swatches for the fabrics the design team could use to kind of create the clothing for their next, season's catalog. And she ended up using Airtable to kind of replace that whole workflow and put it into one place and kind of fit that process exactly to how she imagined it, without all this kind of friction and kind of these ad hoc tools. And I think, because of that, she was actually promoted to kind of like lead up their innovation department. And I think, we have a lot of stories like that where people have these huge ambitions and, have in their heads, they're the business people that know the perfect process, and Airtable gives them the ability to sort of like form that into software. And that's incredibly empowering for them.
Wow. That's really cool. I think a lot of people who have encountered a process gap. And pretty much every developer has probably been there before.
Yeah.
But much, much beyond just developers. I mean, designers run into this. My wife is actually, she coaches teams. She's primarily kind of an agile, a mix of a couple of different titles, but mm-hmm. Ultimately she kind of acts as like the project management role. Although she would hate hearing those words come out of my mouth, but, she has run into this kind of issue where okay, this tool, I wish it had this particular field or this particular concept, and I can't quite, like, this, it's incomplete because of that.
Yeah.
And I think what's so interesting about approaching designing tools for, you know, the cool thing about something like Airtable is that the tool is designed at an abstract layer. Mm-hmm. And so it's designed for designers, not for graphic designers per se, but it's designed for allowing, it is a design tool in and of itself because it allows people to take these concepts and strap them together in unique or interesting ways, useful ways. And I think, you know, that concept is important, not just for Airtable, but for other tools that are emerging. So I actually have this question. You mentioned that that you're particularly interested in tools that democratize something that was otherwise kind of landlocked, that was held away.
Yep.
From those people. What do you see as, you know, in the next 3 to 5 to 10 years even, areas where that is still true, where that's kind of still locked away, and ways that we may be able to tackle that as developers, as designers? You know, what direction do you see that going, that particular concept?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I certainly think in sort of the, you know, we're sort of tackling this software creation to kind of, you know, organize teams and power workflows. And I think, you know, with Blocks, we can sort of like tie into other services a lot more and kind of, you know, make Airtable kind of work in the broader software community much better and you know, kind of play well with other services. So that's something we're definitely working on. That's kind of like going further up the software stack, right? So you sort of have like the, mm-hmm. the data level, and then you have like the view kind of level on top of that. And then like, you sort of have like the, you know, logic, you know, triggers, workflow type stuff. And that's kind of a big part of what we're doing with Blocks. I would say there's still a ways to go with, you know, kind of, we have, you know, kind of building actual custom interfaces. So we have, you know, there's been a lot of progress in prototyping tools, you know, like, Framer and, I think, yeah, Figma is doing some great work and sort of, you know, at least the design tool world, but, and then you have sort of, just a bunch of other kind of prototyping tools where you can kind of keyframe together some different screens, but they don't really let you actually, you know, kind of create those interfaces and kind of build actually, you know, custom UIs and very highly specific, like customized designed UIs and actually like ship those. And I think that will probably change in the future. Hopefully anyways, like it's something that we think about a lot as well. I guess other places, yeah, I definitely think that, you know, maybe even sort of kind of game design, that type of thing. Like I know it's, yeah. It's you know, there's like Unreal and a lot of people are sort of like getting more into 3D modeling and that's becoming a bigger part of the design community. But I can imagine, you know, sort of people kind of simplifying the creation of interactive environments, whether it's VR, just kind of 3D, that type of thing, and the ability to sort of like create games and sort of these immersive experiences. So I'd love to see some innovation there. And I think that could potentially be a spot for that. Yeah, it's off the top of my head. Those are a couple of things. I mean, even things like good writing, you know, basically, you know, if there's some way to, you know, for like Grammarly is an example, right? I use that service. It's really great for just kind of pointing out minor grammar errors, that type of thing. But you can imagine something where, you know, you have some sort of like intelligent sidekick that's helping you do better writing and, or maybe it's even like you can sort of write something and get suggestions from other people. I don't know. I'm just kind of, you know, brainstorming right now, but there's just like a lot of, I feel like there's a lot of room for people to just kind of design better tools and better services to really help people do better creative work and become sort of more proficient and make sort of like creative work that was previously difficult a lot easier. But yeah, beyond that, I guess I don't really have any other specific examples.
Yeah, that's excellent. I think that opens right into a great kind of open field. I spoke with Kevin Kelly. If you're familiar with Kevin.
Oh yeah.
Kevin is
the, he's a catalog.
Cool tools and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, his, one of Kevin's, and this is an episode of Developer Tea. If anybody wants to go back and find it, I don't remember exactly what number, but, one of Kevin's concepts, or I guess, his values or perspectives on the world is, first of all, that optimists are kind of going to rule the future, which is kind of empowering for people who are optimistic, I guess. But secondly, that AI specifically in the future will be a collaborative agent for people. And he uses AI as a noun. So let me be correct in quoting him on that. But AIs will be collaborating with people in the future. And so I think, things like Grammarly are a perfect example of that. It's not necessarily what somebody would immediately call AI, but that concept is assistive intelligence, right? That we have tools that might help us make better decisions or might be by our side while we're performing these otherwise much more taxing tasks. So, for example, I can imagine that a near-ish future will be something that helps you do predictive analytics, bring that to a little bit more of an accessible spot for people like me. And, that we don't have a deep experience with things like machine learning, that I'm a pedestrian when it comes to talking about that stuff even. But that ultimately, there will be ways to incorporate better intelligence that's driven off of that kind of thing and use it in much more individual ways. We saw a lot of this happen with quantified self and all the things that kind of brought what was normally kind of sequestered into the lab, starting even in the 80s, I guess, or even before that with personal heart rate monitors. And then just accelerating into where we are today, where you can monitor almost anything in the comfort of your own home. And that's that kind of democratization, I think, that's such a key. I love that you brought that up, because I think that is still extremely open for innovation. If you're listening to the show right now and you're wondering, man, I'm a talented developer. I don't know where to put all my talent. Put it into that direction. You'd probably do something good for the world if you did that.
Yeah, I like that a lot as well. And I think there's a lot of software designers out there that are basically trying to basically just make everything sort of a push button experience for the user, where it's kind of like, it's a little bit condescending, where it's like, you human shouldn't be making the decision, just like our algorithm will run and like sort of like getting back to your analytics thing, basically tell you what to do in this situation, right? And it's sort of like a lot of stuff is just kind of going, a lot of energy and software is kind of going towards kind of pulling humans out of the mix. And I think that what really excites me are products where you're sort of like using all this, all software is kind of your partner in achieving creative results, which is really the kind of things that humans do best, is the creative side of things. And the more products where we can kind of take machine learning and other kind of AI stuff and basically use that and sort of like use that to kind of augment the things that humans are really good at, I think that's really promising and exciting and very empowering for users. So yeah, kind of going to your example, thinking about a lot of stuff that's going on with machine learning, it's like super arcane and complex and sort of an opaque thing for kind of building out models and like, doing anything like ML related. And it'd be awesome if there is some tool set that kind of gave you a better mental model for visualizing that stuff and tweaking those models and sort of understanding kind of how to, train software to do useful things. And there's a ton of examples like that where I think you could sort of take somebody who specializes in something that's very arcane and kind of put it into a product where you're sort of like taking that very complex thing and which seems complex in the surface, but kind of creating a mental model for somebody that's way simpler. And like, it's a lot of visualization you can do, a lot of like, you tweak this value and you see some output of what happens. There's just sort of like a lot of ways to kind of break down these really complex things and make it understandable many more people who don't have to like really study it for a long time. And then once they have that understanding, they can sort of harness the power of that.
Thank you again to Andrew for coming on today's show. Go and check out what Andrew has created with his teammates over at Airtable.com. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Today's episode was only made possible by the sponsorship of Linode. Go and check it out, spec.fm/Linode. They're going to give you $20 worth of credit just for being a Developer T listener. This is a very generous offer, by the way, because Linode services are already quite affordable. You can go and get a server up and running for $5 a month, which means that $20 worth of credit could actually keep your server running for 4 months. Go and check it out, spec.fm/Linode. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it was inspiring, encouraging, interesting, and educational. Hopefully it filled all of those podcast needs for you today. Thank you so much for listening. If you don't want to miss out on the next part of this interview and future episodes of this show, which there are a lot, we do 3 a week, go ahead and subscribe in whatever podcasting app you use. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, enjoy your tea.